The OTB Podcast Network. With Green Farm on the go. Snack smart with 100% natural protein-powered chicken bites.
Okay, so there is a brilliant piece in this month's edition of Rugby World magazine that focuses on the pathway that has been building from elite rugby to professional wrestling. So to talk about this, we've got Alan Dimmock, who is the features editor, at Rugby World magazine and the writer of this piece. And we've also got professional wrestler Luke Menzies with us as well, better known as Ridge Holland. Guys, you're very welcome to the show. Thanks a million for joining us. Alan, I might start with you. You've spoken to a number of wrestlers in this piece. You've spoken to Triple H, and there's a real sense that there is genuine interest on their part in rugby players who want to try out in wrestling because they've got so many attributes that are so necessary for the game.
Yeah, they're constantly looking for talent, and they've got this big division, a global net to try and find folk from all over the world. And why wouldn't they look at athletes from a professional sphere who have all the boxes that they want ticked? You know, they said that if they were looking for the perfect male wrestler, obviously they're looking for women as well, but if they're looking for the perfect male wrestler and they want to put component parts together, they're looking for someone that's in their mid to late 20s who's, you know, 6'3 plus, weighs, you know, a hefty bunch of kgs, knows how to train hard, knows how to do teamwork, is happy with the life of touring, and, well, lo and behold, that's exactly where rugby falls between those two boundaries. So as an avenue, it's a fantastic way to get the raw materials. But of course, as Luke can attest to, you need the right attitude to do it. You can do all the technical work you want, but realistically, you've got to have the right personality and you've got to have the right sense of salesmanship so that you can really give the audience something to cheer for.
That's a really interesting element of all of this, the attitude and I guess the non-physical components that are required. But we might just stick with the physical elements, Luke. Talk us through why you think rugby players are so well suited to this. I know that one of your ambitions in life was always to become a wrestler. So I think you probably had this pathway in your head somewhere down the line.
Yeah, definitely was. It's such a cliche, but a dream of mine. But going back to your question, I think that just rugby players from either code, whether it's league or union, the big, robust, strong, explosive athletes, and that's everything that we look for in a WWE superstar. And then the use of the grind, the use of the body's hurting. You know, we never really go in the ring 100%. Same as, you know, rugby players, we never really truly go on the field at 100%, you know, so we're used to that grind, we're used to our bodies being sore. And in NXT, where I'm at the minute, we have a massive team ethos. We all help each other along, and it's something that I think that rugby players will be drawn to, is that team environment also as well.
Could you talk us through your path from rugby league player to NXT star?
Yeah, so I had a few clubs in Super League and then a couple of lower league clubs. I was never a world beater, but I was good enough to make a living. I tore my quad playing for Salford. I was on honeymoon in Mexico and I thought, you know what, I'm going to go for this. And I saw a tweet from William Regal and it said, anybody looking to get into the business of professional wrestling should look up the coaching services of Marty Jones. Now, Marty Jones was William Regal's trainer back in the day, a British legend. So I emailed him from my bed in Cancun. 2 days later, I was at my first wrestling practice, getting drilled. And then 6 months later, I had a WWE tryout. We had a bit of a hiccup with the visa. So kind of fast forward 18 months, I was at the WWE Performance Center.
How quickly do you take to it when you talk about that tryout, when you talk about being up against it in those first couple of training sessions? Are you finding it easy in comparison to some of the newcomers?
You know what? People excel at different things or they pick up things at different rates. But I think with me being a fan, an avid fan from being such a young age, I kind of took to it a little bit quicker than what someone would be if they didn't know what it was. But because people do excel at different portions of what we do at different time frames, I've got no real kind of barometer as to how well I did. I just put my nose to the grindstone and just listened and worked hard, and you know, I think things have luckily happened.
So, what are you listening to? What is the specific line of coaching or direction that they're giving you?
Oh, wow. So it goes through, there's different channels. So when you first get to the performance centre, there's the beginner's class, which is coached by another great Robbie Brookside. And that's fundamentals, basic fundamentals, just learning how to be safe in the ring. And then when you're deemed good enough, you'll go up upper tier, then upper tier again, then upper tier again. And with the finishing class being the TV class, which is coached by Shawn Michaels, then he coaches all the in-between stuff, all the little nuances that you need to make good things great. So you have a real kind of vast learning curve, as it were, working on all the different things, but it's a lot to take in. And I've got notepads, you know, that thick, full of information that I've wrote down and from different classes, just so I can have a call back if I'm ever struggling or need a reference for something in a match, or, you know, so the information that we get is a lot.
And that it seems to be the key, Alan, and I'm sure you've heard that in your series of interviews that you've done. Of course, it's a prerequisite to be in great physical shape and to be, I guess, conditioned for years. But it is that willingness to learn that we've heard there from Luke, that willingness to better yourself, which seems to be the most vital component.
Sure. And we, in the process of talking to people about it, we heard a lot about the X factor, the difference maker. That's the difference between taking that step up in the levels and becoming, you know, a primetime recognizable face to becoming, I mean, we're used to seeing superstars in movies now and all that sort of stuff. And we hear a lot about the X Factor, but, you know, you're not always born with that. And a lot of talk that we heard was about how much work goes into that and how much you need to cultivate it. I mean, there's a reason, you know, Luke has had to cultivate a character that he embodies when he goes out in the ring. Now, luckily for him, it's embodying the hard-nosed Yorkshireman, which I'm sure comes very natural to him.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's a lot of hard work that goes behind that. And what people might not recognise when they flick on the telly or they see the highlights show on a Sunday is that there are hours and hours, weeks and weeks, months and months, even years of hard work that goes into it. And what Triple H said to us when we interviewed him at the start of the piece was, we could probably take someone and give them just the fundamentals to make it technically and get on their way within 6 months to a year. That's great. If you've got all the physical attributes, you've got the right attitude, that's perfect. Then you've got to start adding the layers to that. And that's the bit where, you know, your rugby players will be able to see that and recognize themselves within that. What they have is the desire, the belief. You know, the drive, like someone like Luke, who says, I have this backstory, I have the desire to make it because I have this long history with it and I want to be part of a legacy, you need to add that. So you can't go into it blindly. So one of the key things about the piece is not sugarcoating it. You know, it's going to be hard when you get into it, but if you come through a professional rugby environment, you are used to that. It is what you make of it. And if you do crack it properly and you give it a bloody good go, the rewards can be fantastic.
How long does it take for you to actually find that X factor then, Luke, to almost stumble upon the identity of the person that you're going to be in the ring?
So it's very dependent on the person. The performance center and WWE give you all the tools needed, you know, to bring that out of yourself. But it's almost, a person might be fantastic in the ring technically, but he's not connecting with the crowd. You know, so it might be like a light bulb moment where something goes off and he realises that, hang on, this is who I am, this is who I need to be. This is how I get a reaction from the crowd. This is what they bite on. So it's totally different. It definitely takes a lot of searching. I mean, some people have the charisma first and then they struggle with the technical side of it. Some people have the charisma, the technical side of it, but then they struggle with the psychology. You know, it's okay being learning what to do, but it's knowing, you know, when and where to do it at the correct times to elicit a certain response from the people that are watching. So yeah, you definitely go through kind of like an evolution of who you, because who I am now, Ridge Holland, might not be exactly who Ridge Holland is in 5 years' time. So we're always evolving our experiences and things like that. So it's just, I suppose you've just got to take everything that you learn and bottle it up and then try to be the most authentic version of yourself, really, because the people can see through it. As soon as you walk through the curtain, you've got about 5 seconds before the people either go, not buying it, or this guy looks all right. And they can see that from your eyes, from your body language.
One of the things that I find interesting doing this piece was considering what rugby union, of course, but a lot of other sports as well, and league falls into this too, is what other sports can learn from wrestling. And one of the things we kept coming back to was the sense of promotion of character and personality. And one of the things that rugby union in particular really butts up against is the idea of promoting itself and stepping outside the realms of the hashtag rugby family, everyone loves each other, we go for a beer after the game, you know, jolly good fun, that's fantastic. Whereas wrestling has embraced this element of promoting characters that might not be who someone is deep down, but everyone knows the conceit there. All the fans know exactly what the score is, and you leave your disbelief at the door because you want to buy and you want to be entertained. It's the embracing of the entertainment side of things. And what I want to follow up with Luke is how difficult is it to divorce yourself from the team ethos of doing the right things, of the right rugby values, et cetera, et cetera, and then going and saying, you know what, I can play the bad guy. I can be the heel here. I can have people booing me because actually that's me doing my job well and it helps sell tickets.
Yeah, I mean, obviously I always revert back to me being a fan, so I kind of got the dynamic. But if you think about it, whether it's sport, any sport, it's a contest, and there's always going to be, depending what side you're on, there's going to be a hero and there's going to be a villain. And you can bring that from any sport, whether you're a boxer, whether you're an MMA fighter, there's going to be a group of fans that think you're an ace and there's a group of fighters that want to see you get beat. And so you bring that into what we do, and your mannerisms, how you wrestle and stuff, you use those to elicit that response. If you're the heel, you know, you act accordingly. But yeah, I suppose it can be difficult coming from a strict rugby background to kind of think, okay, well, I need to forget everything that I know and just kind of go against the grain. It is quite a lot to take on. It is very difficult to understand that psychology aspect of it, of good versus evil, but how to portray that to the people as well. Yeah, so it's a tough thing to get.
Could rugby learn a thing or two about that? The promotion of the individual, I guess, to the fanfare around the game, could that be promoted a little bit better?
Me?
Yeah, go for it, Alan, if you've got a thought on that.
Sorry.
Well, yeah, I certainly believe so. It's a driving force behind what we're doing in the with the piece in the magazine, is to just make people aware that there are folk that need that help making that step. And I think one of the biggest problems with all forms of rugby, but particularly rugby union, is that people don't like the idea of something fabricated, inauthentic around this historical contest that we've had since the Victorian age, where people are battling against each other and it's, we all want to do it the right way. Whereas actually we've seen from some other sports, and wrestling has been at the forefront of this, is that you can have both. You know, you can have the physical contest and everyone can respect the athleticism and the endeavour there, but also you can then tack on the storyline afterwards. And that's the real challenge, because we've written about this in a number of different ways, in a number of different features. The biggest challenge for rugby union is to try and break the barrier, to try and get nearer to those other sports, those international sports that don't need any help promoting themselves. Football doesn't need any help promoting itself, really. The characters become massive global names, not by the nature of their personalities or how they promote themselves. That comes later. It's because of the size of the sport and the draw of the contest. Rugby needs to work a bit harder to bridge that gap, because if we go on purely contest alone, it's fantastic and we love it, but it needs that little bit extra to try and sell more tickets, to try and get the bigger TV deals, to try and get the bigger sponsorships. And I'm sure Luke can talk to his views on that.
Yeah, I agree. Even coming from my rugby league background, rugby leagues tends to be like a small working class town sport and very kind of M62 corridor type. It's very localized and a very regional sport, and it's also, it just seems blinded to kind of break out of that working class type grassroots based sport, you know. And I think they can definitely learn from what WWE do for, you know, advertising and building stories, because it's the, like as you were saying before, you know, it's the storylines that hook people, that make people want to watch the conflict. You look at Muhammad Ali, for instance, or even Conor McGregor more recently. The press conferences with the entertainment, and that hooked you, you know, to make him to want to watch him fight. I just think rugby in general needs to broaden its scope on how to attract new viewers and make it larger than life. And, you know, there's always a, if you don't change, there's always a chance of becoming stale, and I would not want any, either code of rugby to become stale.
And the thing is that those rivalries that already have a pre-existing storyline are there. You know, in the Pro 14 or Pro 16, as it will be, Leinster-Munster is an enormous fixture. You know, that only needs a little bit more. That only needs the dial turned up a little bit. And you speak to people like Alex Corbusiero, the British and Irish Lion, who flirted with joining the WWE for a while, who's a lifelong wrestling fan. You know, he played in the East Midlands Derby, and he said, the storyline is there. You just need to turn the dial up a bit on it. And that lies with the powers that be, because the athletes are doing their level best to give you the entertainment out in the field.
You should just appoint Eddie Jones as like CEO of World Rugby and leave it at that. Let him stir the pot nicely on every single storyline we have. Yeah. Just to wrap up, Luke, on your own career, your own body at the moment, how are you recovering from the injury? How are things at the moment?
Yeah, things are ticking along nicely. Medical staff's top notch, and I'm 4 months post surgery now, but I'm starting to feel good. I'm back in the gym, starting to feel human again. So hopefully, the doctor said six to 9 months. So hopefully, I'll be back in the ring sooner rather than later.
What was the exact injury?
It was on both legs. So it was on the left leg, it was a fractured and dislocated ankle, and on the right, it was a dislocated kneecap and a ruptured patella tendon. Pretty unusual injury to happen, you know, two injuries to happen at the same time like that.
How did it happen?
I was on the floor outside the ring, and my opponent decided it was time for him to jump out of the ring, and I tried to catch him on the floor, and just my left foot wasn't planted right. That snapped, and then that caused the knee to give way. So it was just a freak accident.
Did you know at that moment that you were in a bit of trouble, that it was going to be a bit of a layoff as soon as the impact happened?
Yeah. As soon as it happened, it was like the referees jumped on, and it was like threw the X up, and it was like, yeah, this is done. It was on live TV as well, so which was nice. So.
So what happens next then? How close until you can actually start doing a little bit of contact? You say it was 6 to 9 months in total.
Mm-hmm. Maybe we've got another 4 months.
Right.
Yeah. Maybe another 4 months. So we're assessing weekly, you know, about how I'm responding to treatment, and it's kind of a suck it and see type deal. Really, we've just got to like I say, do those weekly reevaluations and see if I'm healing well and see how my movement is, and we'll take it from there. Take it one step at a time.
When you've got that amount of time off, I mean, obviously you're doing your rehab and everything, and something you'll be used to with your career in rugby, but. Is that a good time for character development or to have a think about stuff like that?
Yeah, it's a perfect time to, you know, leave no stone, you know, unturned as regards to what you can bring, what depth you can add to your character, what type of things you can do in the ring, how can you make people, you know, believe in you that little bit more, and just studying tape as well, as you would do rugby. You know, you would study tape, you would just want to get better at the little things as well, you know, because if you get better at all the little things, they add up and you become a more polished performer. So it's tape study, it's character development, and then obviously I've got time. Like today I'm going to NXT TVs, there's tons of people there that I can talk to and pick their brains about certain things. So it is an actual perfect time to take the opportunity to grow as a performer.
What are your ambitions then in the medium term once you are back in the ring?
So the ambition is just to get back in the ring and start throwing people around again. That's that's the issue. I mean, I gave people a little taste of what Ridge Holland can do. And as soon as I get back, it's time to unleash, you know, and I'm looking to take over.
Who else would you like to see in the ring, Alan, from the rugby world over the next couple of years?
Well, look, there are certain... It's funny, when I was speaking to people from the States, they were like, because the big difference actually really is, with all the best will in the world, is an enormous superstar name from rugby union, with the exception of probably a handful, people aren't really going to know who they are. in the States. So it's a clean slate for a lot of people to try and make a clean break. That being said, there are some fantastic personalities in rugby union. It's funny, when I was speaking to the folk there about doing this piece, they were like, oh, you know, if we could try and get someone like Maro Itoje is a really big name. And in fact, he's on the front cover of Rugby World this month as well, because we're saying that 2021 is the year of Maro Itoje. And they were saying, wouldn't it be fantastic if we could get him talking about it or interacting with people? And I thought, I think he's got his hands full. Everyone wants him to be the British and Irish Lions captain. I think he's probably a bit busy at the moment.
It depends if the price is right. I'm sure Maro will probably have a think about it. Listen, you've been listening to Alan Dimmock, who is features editor at Rugby World magazine and writer of this brilliant piece. Make sure to go check it out right now. It's on Rugby World. And Luke Menzies, better known as Ridge Holland. Thanks a million, folks. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Yes. Thank you, guys.
The OTB Podcast Network with Green Farm on the go. Snack smart with 100% natural protein-powered chicken bites.